This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Tuesday, as far as I can check, on the Press Box. Plenty to get into today. Always because of you, we do what we do. And we're going to do it for the next 3 hours. So there's lots of opportunities to get into lots of things. Very disappointing sports night for Houstonians last night.
Indeed.
The early showing was the return of A.J. Hinch and a not-so-great Zach Greinke, followed up by the nightcap of close but no cigar after getting absolutely lambasted in the first half. The Rockets made a late push, got it within five with under five, but couldn't close the deal and did what they were supposed to do. Made it competitive, just not competitive enough to win, and two L's in the column of H-Town after last evening. Nicholas, what is going on?
Not much. Pretty much just everything that you just said. I mean, I guess it's not a completely terrible night for Houston sports, considering that, you know, what you just said, the Rockets did what they were supposed to do, and just a disappointing second inning. The whole game was disappointing, but to me, that second inning was deflating because it's kind of been the theme of the Astros, leaving people on base and scoring position and just not.
Yeah,
just
it was
not
a
getting
combo
the runs.
Platter, right? They had a couple opportunities, like you said, where they had multiple runners in scoring position and on base, and they didn't do anything with that. And then Zach Greinke was not very good.
No.
He blamed his slider, but look, his overall control, one thing we know about Greinke, he doesn't have the velocity he used to have, but he's going to have control enough that he keeps the walks to a minimum. He gets the timely outs when he needs them. And last night, the signs early were just leading you to believe it was going to be one of those nights in the wrong direction, because he walked three guys in the early innings. He gave up big hits when he definitely didn't need them. And that, coupled with what you mentioned with leaving runners on base and what the offense was not able to do, you were getting shut out 6-0 until some irrelevant runs late, including a Michael Brantley home run. Look, but it just was one of those nights.
Right. And it was his first bad outing, and he's had two other games prior to this, and he's done well. So I'm not necessarily mad at the entire situation, but going back to that second inning, it was absolutely deflating. Gurriel, who was basically the one Astro that had a good game, maybe Tucker too, but he singles. Then I think Tucker singles. Then I think Miles Straw, you know, I think he forces Tucker out, but he makes it on base. Then he's still second. You got two on base, one on second, one on third, and you just can't get anybody in. And Maldonado hasn't been doing very well, but it's good to see Yuli Gurriel. And you can hear the broadcast, like Blummer even allude to this, like they didn't want Miles Straw to bunt because they weren't really comfortable with who was up, and that was Maldonado. So they kind of wanted him to go for it. And you got a situation again, you know, with two guys on base, and you just don't capitalize on it, and not a good situation. So now the Astros officially lose three in a row, but not the end of the world because it's baseball. And the Tigers are not a very good team, so I guess that hurts a little bit. Nice to see A.J. Hinch in the stadium for a little bit, and they gave him a little bit of a tribute, so that was good to see.
Yeah, no, look, I think that going into last night's game, you were tied for the best record in the American League, and that's all you can ask for. And as we continually say, there's going to be highs and lows, ebbs and flows in a baseball season of 162 games. And so as good as they started, which was a phenomenal sign for a team that had trouble on the road last year when they were on the road for the first two series, now at home, as you mentioned, having lost three in a row at Minute Maid, it's time to kind of right the ship. They got everything out of the way with A.J. Hinch. It was a nice video tribute. He was very gracious in how much he loves the city, and I was happy to see that. Now it's time to just get back to playing good baseball. The thing we talked about yesterday, Nick, is going to be a factor in what we just talked about with Greinke and otherwise. That is Christian Javier. You have a luxury not many teams in this league have. You not only have good young pitching, but because you have a Jake Odorizzi, which in a very savvy signing by the Astros front office and James Click, you gave yourself the luxury of having a sixth starter. Now, whether it's Greinke that might need a little extra time to figure things out, if he does indeed get rid of his slider or whatever he's going to do to adjust. We know that Lance McCullers, no matter what contract he signed, has not been able to spend a full season healthy for quite a while and give you the kind of innings you need. But also because of that and so much more, with the uncertainty of what's going on with Fromber, you have a guy that is pitching very well, though he's struggling to get out of the sixth inning, you know, getting into the sixth, deeper into games. That'll happen when you get stretched out. But you have a luxury not many teams have in that you can play musical starters for a little bit and you can find answers to what would be problematic questions in other franchises.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I think he had a, what, 0.92 whip, 2.08 ERA, 1.65 FIP. So, I mean, look, I guess that's a part of their strategy to demote him, I guess, for order easy. But I like what Christian Javier brings to the table. I mean, I would like to see – look, we all know that pitching hasn't really been the issue. It's been really their bats, particularly last night's game. It's really their bats. I mean, if you take that situation in the second inning and you capitalize on it, I think you have a completely different ball game. Yeah, Brantley and Carlos Correa hit a home run late, but they were pretty much meaningless at that point. They probably weren't going to catch up and do anything. So, I like what I think you're right. I think they have a lot. If they approach Christian Javier correctly, I think you have a really, really good situation considering who we've lost in that rotation, Gerrit Cole. And now we don't know what to expect of Justin Verlander. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm all for it.
No, and it'll be interesting to see. And again, Odorizzi's first start is tonight. So you're going to get a real clear indication of what they're going to have to deal with for the next, say, couple weeks. Because as was mentioned in making the move to send Javier to the taxi squad, they don't think because of days off, they're going to need a fifth starter for a little bit now. But because there's some uncertainty about if Greinke gets it worked out, you know, and when Fromber may or may not come back, and some of the other issues that they – and stretching guys out. Because, look, their bullpen, we know that there are still questions. I think they still could use a bona fide closer. I think they could still use one veteran that you could stretch out to go longer, long relief, like a Davinsky you used to have. You had some other guys that were capable of going long relief that aren't there right now, Josh James and other guys. So I think that there's going to be a need potentially for someone, whether they're a starter or not, to come in and give them multiple innings, and that's also where Javier could step in.
Yeah, and look, I don't think they're done looking for more pitching. I mean, I don't think they're done. I think James Click knows that. I think he's aware. I mean, I don't necessarily have no faith in James Click, so I think he'll be able to do that. They just have to bounce back in tonight's game and not have crappy at-bats like they had last night. I think that's the big thing.
Well, Jordan's 1-for-13 with 7 strikeouts. His one hit was a bunt hit in his last 13. That's not what you're looking for from your big bopper.
No. I mean, it was basically at one point, it was basically just Yuli and Tucker were the only two players to get on base. And one of Tucker's at-bats, he was hit by a pitch, and that's why he was able to get on base. Yuli went 3-for-4, so that's good to see. He didn't really try to, hit for, like, power, I guess. He was just trying to get on base.
Went the other way, pushed it into the right field alley twice. Really good pieces of hitting by Yuli Gurriel.
Yeah, sure. I was really happy to see that. I know they lost, but I was happy to see that he can do that because you got guys like Yuli Gurriel and Michael Brantley. And if you get consistency, because you know you're going to get consistency out of Brantley, but if you get consistency out of Yuli Gurriel, man, I think that really helps the offense, might even relieve some of the pressure on the pitching. But yeah, man, I really like to see Yuli Gurriel. I like seeing him go 3-for-4. I mean, I think he did really, really well yesterday, but unfortunately a loss, and they can bounce back tonight. The Rockets, they did what they were supposed to do, I guess, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely did. I keep telling you that. That's the barometer, especially with all these blowouts that have been happening in the NBA recently. They did what we wouldn't expect them to do. They got down fairly big, and normally they could fold up their tents and just go home and go, that's what we needed anyway. We'll take the loss. We're not even going to give it an effort.
Right.
No, instead, they fought. And in the second half, they fought hard. And they took that big deficit, and they got it within 5 with 5 minutes to play. And at that point, that's your win. You got a W in the back of your mind no matter what happens with this game, because the ultimate win is you came close and you didn't need the cigar. You got another loss under your belt. You got closer to trying to solidify getting your own pick this season, but yet you showed the fan base, we're competitive. We've got guys that want to play. We've got some young talent that looks like it's going to start to get, or continue to develop, and those are encouraging signs. Even a Kelly Olynyk, who's not young, looks like a guy that if he's willing to stay, he could be a big role to have a big role to play going forward for this squad.
Yeah, I like Kelly Olynyk as long as he doesn't think that like that 1-2, like, you know, him and Wood are going to be the guys. As long as he understands that, and I think he kind of does, I'm absolutely okay with Olynyk being on this team.
But he's been on multiple teams where he hasn't. He's been with superstar players, so he's been in Boston.
So he's been there.
He's been in Miami.
So he gets it,
and he can play the role. Christian Wood's the guy you worry about more because he thinks part of the reason why he signed here was he was going to be one of the men, not the man necessarily, but one of the men. And that's where when you're starting to see signs of him saying, "Well, they don't call any plays for me."
Yeah. That's why John Wall is probably passing up, like you mentioned all the time. You always talk about how John Wall passes up on giving him the ball or passing him the ball, and that might be, and that's the kind of friction you don't need. It exists on every team, but I think John Wall knows. Honestly, I said, look, if you want to continue to sunk, you don't necessarily have to tank. Just keep John Wall in the lineup because the guy is not consistent, dude. He's not consistent. And the other thing is, and if you look at that first half, and credit to the Suns because they were shooting absolutely insane, but your perimeter defense was hot garbage. You weren't rotating. Yeah. It was basically non-existent. You weren't really trying on defense. That's not to say that they weren't going to hit their shots because they were kind of on fire anyway. But, yeah, I mean, it just your defense was just absolutely non-existent, particularly on the perimeter. And so that's I think it hurts your case. But like you mentioned, they bounced back in the second half to the Suns' defense. They just didn't shoot as well in the second half. They came out in that third quarter like they just forgot how to shoot a basketball.
Plus, it's easy to relax when you're up big.
They were cruising a little bit, no question.
And I think, again, they got a whole lot to play for. And the Rockets, obviously, ideally, for three quarters have a lot to play for and then have more to lose by winning than by getting a moral victory by getting a dub.
No.
So it worked out perfectly. So we'll have some, we can talk, have some Rockets discussion, also some discussion around the NBA, a really massive injury last night that's going to be heard throughout the Western Conference is something that we're going to have to talk about there.
Yep.
Lots of other things on the agenda, always available for you guys to get in on the discussion. 713-780-3776. That's our HRNP listener line. You can call that number and text that number. You can hit us on Twitch. On Twitter, it's at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K, as we are constantly interacting with you peeps. So we look forward to getting it started and rolling like a barrel downhill. It is the Press Box, ESPN.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back on The Box, Nick and myself till 4 as we take you through your midday and talk sports and a whole lot more.
I've got an NFL note for you.
Please bring it as a nugget. Would you consider it a nugget?
A little bit of a nugget. It actually popped off in the last segment of the Charlie Polillo show, but I did see Tom Pelissero report this, and in regards to NFL teams who have employees that are not vaccinated.
Okay.
And so here the NFL, and this is the tweet as it reads from Tom Pelissero. The NFL informed clubs today any team employee who refuses a COVID-19 vaccination without, quote, bona fide medical or religious ground, close quote, will be barred from Tier 1 or Tier 2 status and thus have restricted access within the team facility and not work directly with players per sources.
It's fair.
Yeah, discussions continue between the NFL and the NFLPA about what form off-season programs will take with scheduled Monday start. So they're basically going to restrict. The NFL will essentially restrict NFL team employee access in the event that you're not vaccinated or you refuse to get vaccinated.
And if you don't understand the tiers, what happens is that even for the Rockets, so Tier 1 or – and I don't know how they label them, but the height of access that you get – are those people that are allowed to be either the team itself with the coaching staff and the support staff, equipment managers, trainers, et cetera.
Right.
And then the media directors and the key personnel needed to be around the team. And they are the only ones allowed, like, say, for instance, on the locker room level of NRG or on the very lowest level, we would call the service level of the Toyota Center. And then based on what you do and where you need to go within the building or the offices, the tiers are then and the passes are structured so that security knows, oh, you're only allowed as low as the top of the first level. Oh, you're allowed in the lower bowl of the seats, but you're not allowed underneath. So, and it makes sense. I mean, if you don't, because your product is your players and you have to keep them safe, I think it's in the best interest of the league and the teams to do that.
Yeah. So so this is coming from the league. So it basically relieves the NFL owners from putting that pressure. So like if they have a situation where, you know, an employee doesn't want to get vaccinated, they could just say, hey, look at this NFL memo. We don't want to do it. So it kind of gets the NFL teams, I guess, out of the situation. But considering all the outbreaks and everything, I guess the NFL just doesn't want to take any chances. So if there's And most of the states, from what I, not to make this a massive vaccination discussion, but from what I've seen, many states are like at what, in the 50, 60, 70 percentile range in terms of vaccinations. So my point is there's plenty of vaccines available is my point. Whether whether that's the correct percentile or not, there's plenty of vaccines. In most cases, at least particularly here in Texas, you can register and I think you can get an email pretty quickly. So. But they stopped. They stopped the Johnson & Johnson one, which is crazy because apparently it's causing blood clots. And so that was the one that I wanted the most, Joel. I was like, man, I want that Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But now apparently it's causing blood clots. So I'm going to stay away. I'll just go with the Pfizer or whatever vaccine is available at that time.
So you bring it up. I got my second shot this morning.
How are you feeling? I was going to text you.
I did, and Trey asked me about the side effects. Well, so far, so good. Some people have said it's kind of like 8 to 12 hours after you get the shot that you might feel them.
Okay.
But so far for me, nothing. No injection site pain, nothing. And it's I got the Pfizer. But I've heard a lot of horror stories. So some of my buddies had tipped me off that for the week leading up to the day of your shot, you should take vitamin C every day. The day of the shot, you should take either an emergency or a Zicam, as well as two Tylenol. I did that, so maybe that's helping. But we'll continue to monitor it and let you guys know so that people kind of can prepare for it. But, yeah, so far so
good. So you're not going to pass out in the middle of the show. You'll be fine.
Yeah, I drove here, and I didn't have any issues. So, I mean, I think I should be fine. But
you don't drive that well sober. So, like, with you under the influence of a vaccine. Actually, I whooped that ass yesterday. You tried to race me on 59.
I did not. You were screaming at somebody in your car, by the way.
No, I wasn't.
You were on the phone yelling. Either that's when you get that militant rap going and you sing it to yourself, or you were actually screaming at someone because I was like making faces at you alongside
I'm trying
you.
To remember if I was. Was it road rage?
Oh, yeah. Well, you were not looking my direction and I was on your left side. You were screaming and then yelling and then going. You were going around people on the right side and never saw me.
I get really aggravated with people who like knowingly change lanes in front of you, knowing that you're pretty, you know, like you're driving fast, but they change lanes into that lane anyway, knowing you're going fast. And then they just go like 55 miles an hour in the left lane. When we all know everybody goes 95 miles an hour in the left lane, no one drives 55, but not 95, but you know, you get what I'm saying.
Left lane, fast lane, right.
Significantly faster. Yep. So maybe that was a situation that I was yelling. I might have been yelling at somebody about that, but
I don't know. Yeah,
I think you've decided to take the L on the racing because you can't keep up.
No, I don't because I'm not like you with what do you have, like 163 speeding tickets?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, see, I don't. And there's a reason for that. I'm intelligent with the way I use my speed.
You are a defensive ass driver. It almost annoys me sometimes how defensive you are. Like,
why?
I don't know. Like you're so nice when it like. You're an a-hole on the fourth floor, but like when we're at the Astros parking lot, like you're all nice and letting people go out of the parking lot first. Like we have all this time in the world. I'm like, no, cut this dude off. I'm trying to get out of this game. There's a massive line, and you're saying, no, go ahead.
That's not necessary.
Why is it not necessary?
Because the more you can spread kindness, the more that you will.
No, the rules are this: if you're on the left side and someone else is on the right side, it's one car per lane. That's the rules. So if you're coming off the parking lot from one side of the parking lot, you get a chance, and then someone else gets a chance. You, on the other hand, you'll just let two, three cars go.
Not two or three. I mean, the one. And it's supposed to do every other car. So if I let someone in, then I go next, then the person behind me should let someone in. And then, again, it's the gift that keeps on giving if it's done correctly.
I disagree with that driving completely.
Okay. Well, that's between you and whoever you're driving against that you get upset with.
So should I stop drooling and having this love affair for Ohtani? Or are you on the bandwagon yet or no?
I'm not. And even when you had said it, I just – look, I'm a big Tatis guy, and we were talking about the comparison. I'm on board with Tatis for a lot of reasons. And I like his showmanship, and I like his kind of flair.
Yeah.
And because he's also been able to stay healthy. I get where you're going with Ohtani, but again, I have a lot of issues with can he stay healthy. I have a lot of issues with, you know, trying to do too much. But we'll see. I mean, he's obviously a massive talent.
No, I mean, to be fair, I'm probably more excited about his potential more than anything else, because what he can do or could potentially do is something that we haven't seen in a very, very long time, at least not at that level, you know. I forgot what the exit velocity was on that home run he hit yesterday, but, I mean, the guy could swing. So,
yeah.
There's no question. So if he can stay healthy, I think that'd be in it. Like, and honestly, I'm totally guilty of that guy. You know that how we accuse, or I guess it's not an accusation, but we criticize people for being fans of players as opposed to teams. I'm totally that guy in Major League Baseball. Obviously, the Astros, they're my team, but I'm totally a fan of certain players around the league. I'm totally that person.
And it's
when
fair,
it comes out to baseball.
That's fair. I just think, because I'm always Astros first and foremost, and I'm watching them every night, and I'm passionate about the results of the team. Other than that, there are still players that I like to watch, and it's always been that way. And growing up a Brewers fan, we had some lean years just like the Packers where, you know, and as to be a fan of the sport, it was in your best interest to pick a new team or pick new guys. So yeah. I get it. I think AJ is one of those guys from basketball's perspective where he's a fan of NBA players, not necessarily NBA teams. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think that when you look at it from a bigger perspective, we were talking about Matsuyama yesterday and winning the Masters and the potential to have that profitability factor for him because he carried the weight of a country to become the first Japanese player to ever win a major in the Masters.
Yeah.
It could be $250 million. It could be a billion. It doesn't matter because that's what he's going to get out of it is not only a massive sum of money, but he also earned it because – The pressure that these American players don't have any idea about by carrying that big of a weight.
Oh, yeah.
Because if he had failed, and we've seen this in World Cup soccer with other countries, you could be one of the most prominent and most popular players on a team playing soccer in another country. If you fail, if you miss a goal opportunity, if you miss an opportunity on the world's biggest stage to do something big, the ramifications could be your life. That's how serious it is. The fact that he was able to do for the country of Japan something that had never been done before, he is going to reap benefits after benefits, and it's going to be, he's always going to be known as the guy.
Oh, without a doubt, because in that country, and a lot of countries, what they do is when somebody from their country is particularly successful, even if it's temporary, they just completely go all in on their guy. Like they're absolutely behind their guy, and you see it. And as a matter of fact, they're probably going to be behind him so much that next year when the Masters come around, Joel, they'll probably still get dividends from the Japanese market viewing them and watching that event just because of him winning it
the
year before.
And
they'll
highlight more the Champions Dinner where he gets to pick the menu, and that's a big deal. And his the first time ever. A Japanese player is going to be the one that's, you know, being in that position. They're going to want even more access to highlight more things because it's that big of a deal. And you think about it, and I experienced it firsthand when we got Yao.
With the
impact worldwide, but particularly in China and across Asia, that Yao brought. And I think I've told you this before. We might have mentioned it one time on the air, but I was in the year of the Yao, and we knew how big it was when they followed us for a full year to document everything with Yao's experience in the NBA. But more so than that, the year that we went to China to play two exhibition games against the Kings as kind of an homage for Yao to come home. And we went and did we shot and did features and stories while he went back to the grade school that he went
attended.
To.
Yeah.
Nick, when I tell you that I knew what people must have felt like following the Beatles at the heat of their at the height of their popularity. We had to go. We took one of those kind of mini buses, you know, the bubble buses that used to take some of the kids to school. It was, for lack of a better term, but it was one of the shorter buses. But it, there was like six or seven of us on the an NBA representative and Yao, a bus driver, me, my camera guy, a couple other people. We literally were going the wrong way on a one-way street just to get near the school because for a half a mile, 10 deep on either side of the road and getting closer to the road, blocking the road, were people just stacked up to see Yao. When we left, the bus driver was so worried because of they were shaking the bus. They were pushing on both sides.
Yeah, and, you said this was a smaller bus, too.
And the bus driver was freaking out, and Yao actually walked up to the front of the bus and said, here, drive to this corner, take a right, go back around through this alley, and go take this street. And Yao directed the guy away from the crowd to get us out of there. But I just remember shaking my head as we finally were in the clear, looking back at it and going, oh, my God, I don't think we fully grasped.
Oh, he was beyond a star at that point. Yeah, he was like he was beyond a star at that point. He was like above.
And it was preseason.
Above life. Yeah. I talk about the Asian market all the time in terms of their power. I've told you about the streaming numbers. I've told you about, like, it's unbelievable how much they follow their own in the event that they become successful or make it at a big, big level. So, yeah, I mean, I can see that. And you know what? Ohtani might be experiencing some of that himself.
Sure, absolutely. That's another iconic figure. Because you think about it, there were other Chinese basketball players that played in the league
prior to,
Batir even won a ring with the Spurs, though he didn't play. And Dallas had, I can't remember the guy's name right now. But they never even came close to the success and the scrutiny and attention that Yao got. And he handled it so well. And I think we would be actually talking about him in a totally different light had he not had the catastrophic injuries that couldn't really be healed.
Yeah,
because he had all the ability.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. His foot just had to be reconstructed like 85,000 times. So
the screws and everything in his foot that would show up on a metal detector in the airport.
Because of his height and what he needed for mobility.
Yeah, it was a bad situation. So just a little information there. I got the shot. I'll keep you guys posted. So far, so good. Lots to talk about across sports. I want to get into the Warriors and the Nuggets game last night for two very specific reasons. One's very good. One's very bad. We'll get into that and a whole lot more next in the second half hour of the program. It's Press Box ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Murray got hit, and this is going to be Golden State ball. And Murray's down and hurt. Oh, my goodness. Oh, no.
He just came back. You know, he was gone for 4 days. His knees been bothering him. He took those four games to try to get right. First game back, obviously, it's just an awful feeling. So, you know, keep Jamal in your thoughts and prayers, and hopefully we'll get some good news.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers abound, and yet the news is exactly what everybody feared when he went down. It was a non-contact injury. That was the highlight call. But as he went to the basket and literally on replays, he was not hit. He did land. And the minute he landed, he clenched his knee and was writhing on the floor in pain. The news now coming out this morning that after the MRI, he did indeed tear his ACL. His return is unknown. He definitely won't be back for the rest of this season, and that is a killer for a team that made moves at the deadline to try and be relevant again in the playoffs as they were last year. They made significant moves because in getting Aaron Gordon and strengthening their rotation, They had won 7 or 8 in a row. They lost 2 of the last 3 since then, but they still had a roster full of talent, and he was one of the 2 that really made that team go. Obviously, the big fella, the Joker, is one of them. But on top of that, Jamal Murray's a guy that does everything for that squad. And we remember back to the bubble when he and Spider Mitchell were going back and forth with massive games each and every night in that Utah series.
Yeah.
And you realize just what a player Jamal Murray could be. Taking him off that team is like just stripping them of hope for going, you know, all the way, getting all the way to the Western Conference Finals or to a championship.
It essentially eliminates their chances. Look, I've been pretty vocal about the teams I think that have a realistic chance to win a championship. Doesn't mean that I didn't think Denver Nuggets don't have a chance. They have a chance. If you're that good of a squad, if you're a high seed in the Western Conference, you absolutely have a chance. The Phoenix Suns, I don't think they're going to win a championship. They absolutely have a chance. But when you look at that roster and how fun they are to watch and how much Murray means to that roster, you've essentially eliminated your chances to be in any discussion about championship. Now, you'll probably make the playoffs. How far you'll go, that remains to be seen. It won't be surprising to me if they get bounced in the first round. But guess what? It wouldn't be surprising to me if they surprise somebody and they get past the first round. Regardless, they're not winning the whole thing without Murray. He's just too important of a piece. And this is right when he got the contract extension, because he's getting 30 a year, isn't he?
Yeah, he's taking
care. Getting like $31-32 million a year. So like it just sucks for everybody there. It sucks for Denver, because even if they don't win a championship, that's a fun team to watch. And sure, it gives everybody else hope. It always makes you feel like you're a star or two away when you have a roster like that. And it just sucks when the main piece
Aaron
goes away.
Gordon too.
Yeah.
To the great combination that they already had and some of the other pieces that they already had made you believe that, hey, they're a sleeper pick. They're not going to be the favorite with the 2 LA teams. But because of what they did last year and then the additions they made this year, you had to take them seriously, like a Utah Jazz. Just a slight tier below the 2 LA teams, but not further down than that, because they had enough talent in numbers to where they could do something. Now you take him off the team and you say, well, they could probably win in the first round. And they might be somewhat competitive, but he is one of the straws that stirs that drink on a nightly basis. Not having him is just too big of a loss to overcome, I think, in both of our opinions.
Yeah, and you heard the coach who was saying he'd just been back for 4 days. So just a deflating situation there for Denver. Not good. Still got a bunch of good players. We talked about Aaron Gordon. We talked about Jokic. And look, they added Aaron. They added Eric Gordon not too long ago, and I thought that was a good piece. Yeah. You know, I don't think they, you know, it put them over the edge, but I thought it was a good piece.
No, but when you look at their whole roster, right, and the guys that can help. Will Barton has playoff experience. He can help. JaVale McGee was the guy that was going to back up the Joker.
Don't forget Bol Bol.
Your boy Bol Bol's probably not going to see the court. But a guy like Paul Millsap, veteran, been there, done that, and is a real leader. Michael Porter Jr., a guy that's on the scene that could possibly be one of the main guys on any NBA team in the next couple of seasons. So they definitely had enough talent on the roster depth-wise, and what they did by adding McGee and Gordon at the deadline, if in fact Jamal Murray was a part of that team. Now that he's not, it changes the fortunes of everything for the franchise, and that's a shame.
No, it does.
Because they're a small market team, so you're not going to get the guys on buyout contracts like Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge and Drummond and guys like that that are going to go, well, that's where I want to go play. That's a destination city for me to win.
They have to really believe that you're going to win a championship, or you're like right there. And I think most players didn't believe that. So,
and on the flip side, the good news of that from the same game is, and one of the 2 losses that the Nuggets have endured after winning 8 straight since they made those moves before the deadline. The Warriors won last night because Steph Curry not only had 53, he became the all-time leading scorer in Warriors history, surpassing Wilt Chamberlain. The guy we saw the other night do it to the Rockets, did it again, and took it up a notch. If there is one guy right now carrying his whole squad, and I thought about this last night when I was watching him do what he was doing. He is capable, if they finish somewhere in the play-in tournament, he is capable of going off enough to get them into the first round and then do enough damage to where if you still have a Draymond Green, you still have a Wiggins.
They can do enough damage to where they can ruin somebody's plan,
yeah,
is what you're saying.
Well, not only the plan, Nick, I think depending on the matchup, that if it wasn't the fact that they'd have to play the Lakers or the Clippers, if they were a team that got in and had to play even a Dallas, but if they had to play a Utah, they could make you a little bit worried.
No, they could. And if that's something that they really want to do you think Steph Curry shares the same mentality of Luka Doncic, though, how he doesn't like the idea of a play-in tournament?
Yeah, not maybe.
I mean, do you want to be in the playoffs is my point, if you're Steph Curry and you have the ability to do so. Now, we all know the reason why his numbers are going up is because of the injury situation. Let's be honest. They don't have Kevin Durant. He's not on the team no more, but Klay Thompson is not there to shoot. So he obviously has to step up. It's just not the same situation. And that's a part of the reason, a small part of the reason why his numbers are going up. Do you really want to go through all that? And remember, he has a history of ankle issues. And,
yeah,
and force yourself when you know realistically you do not have a chance to win a championship.
But you do, because you know next year you are going to be stacked. You're going to get Klay back, which is a huge boost anyway, right? But
if
because of the horrible
back.
Trade made with the Timberwolves, when the Wolves gave up multiple picks for D'Angelo Russell, there's a chance that regardless of what the Warriors pick is, they're getting Minnesota's pick again, which could be a lottery pick, which could give them another top quality player to go with Wiseman, Jonathan Wiseman, who they got this year, who got hurt in the Rockets game the other night, might be out for the rest of the regular season. And from a Steph Curry perspective, you have to go into every game with the mentality of, I'm not going to get hurt again, and I'm going to continue to do the things I do. And for the most part, he's a perimeter player. He goes inside every now and then, but he doesn't go to the basket hard enough.
No. Usually his ankles are rolling from, I don't know, he stepped on somebody else's foot,
right.
Or... So yeah, I see what you're saying, and you make a good point. But he is 33 years of age, and the one thing that the Golden State Warriors have to prove, Joel, is whether or not they can be that top tier team. That's the burden on them right now, because they don't really have to prove
this
anything
year or going forward.
No, just going forward, because they don't have to prove anything.
Because I think
they've got three championship rings. Like, they don't need it. Like, they don't need a. They don't need to prove too much. But I just think they want to themselves more than anybody else prove that they can just. The Splash Brothers and Draymond Green can go back and at least play in the finals or even win a championship. Well, I think that's the burden on them right now.
So the rumor is they're going to chase Kawhi in the offseason, which means they have money.
And I don't know how much money,
but I think that Kawhi is going to stay put. But regardless, if they have money to go with the fact that we forget that they have Kelly Oubre, they have Wiggins, they have Draymond, they have Steph, they have a young Wiseman, assuming he comes back because he doesn't need surgery, and then you add Klay. So you already are going 7-8 deep with guys that can absolutely ball out in the NBA. I think to them, it's not to prove that they could be a top-tier team again. I think to them, it's to prove that if we're healthy, we can play with anybody.
Yeah.
They just have to be healthy. And the big ifs are Klay, Draymond has to stay healthy, and obviously the head of the snake is Steph.
Right. Well, and I think the exit of Kevin Durant, winning one more time without Kevin Durant, we still can do this without Kevin Durant. I think that has a little bit to do with it. But look, if they want to do that, look, at the end of the day, they're competitors. You know, the Rockets are just a bad team. You can say they're tanking all they want. They're just a really, really, really bad team. I mean, John Wall just can't do anything. And it's so funny you mentioned the Kawhi situation, Joel, because I was thinking, look, who's going to take back that contract, right? And it's pretty much nobody. But if you can find the right star player to be upset with it, just one more disgruntled player, then maybe, just maybe. But at the end of the day, like, let's say Kawhi is so fed up with the Clippers after this season in the event they don't win. Let's just say, would it be the Rockets, or would it be a team like the Lakers or the Golden State Warriors? Or it won't be a team like the Rockets, because he doesn't want to wait 2, 3, 4, 5 years for the Rockets to rebuild and do anything else. So that's what really puts the Rockets in a bad situation. Even if you can take advantage of a situation where there's an NBA star that's just upset with their team and wants to leave, you still can't use John Wall, just because they're so...
He ain't coming. But you know what?
You're so far deep into the rebuild.
Yeah, no one's coming
process.
Here. I hate to break it to Rockets fans.
They're not.
No one's coming here.
No.
That whole luster that they had a few years
it's
ago
gone.
With the buyout market and everybody saying they're going to chase
it's
a chip and become
gone.
A Rocket. Yeah, it's in the rearview mirror, and it ain't coming back anytime soon. And the only way that you can speed up the process right now is to make sure you keep your own top four pick and then let the cards fall where they may, that they're going to draft the right player and that it's going to slowly become something that you build back to. But for right now, yeah, the worst is yet to come. And it's for both the Texans and the Rockets, and that sucks. That's why the Astros mean so much to us as we go forward. Before we go any further with the show, I do want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, I've been telling you about them for quite a while because they mean something to me, because they've made a difference in my life. They can do the same thing for you. They take care of men and women and get you feeling like you did in your past and you thought you probably could never feel like again. And whether you do hormone therapy, which they have for men and women, or do like I do with the B12 shots and get your blood pressure checked and do a lot of other things in terms of your health and wellness, starting with a body composition analysis and then continuing with weekly meetings so that they can walk you through what's working, what's not, and what you can actually do to enhance what you've been working on. It's all done at Apollo Men's Health, conveniently located near downtown Houston. They have two locations. And Dr. O was working at those other clinics, so he knows what worked and what didn't and what was just a gimmick. And he said, you know what, enough of this. I'm going to start my own place where I can do it my way all the time and get people all the benefits and the things that work and avoid all the stuff that doesn't. Now you get to reap the benefits on a daily, weekly, or monthly basis, depending on what you choose to do. It starts right away with just setting up your first appointment. Because once you do, by going to apollomh.com, or if you want to make it easier for you and you want to pick up the phone, you can call them and do the same thing, 832-664-9966. When you call and set up that appointment, you're going to find out that military discounts are available, as well as for first responders. Most major insurance is accepted, but more importantly than that, you're going to get people that care enough to ask you questions. If you answer them honestly and tell them what you're after and what you're trying to do, they're going to get results for you too. And that means from the boardroom to the bedroom to the weight room, whatever you're trying to accomplish, they can help you reach those goals. They're good people doing great things. You need to check them out today. Tell them that I sent you by, and on your first visit, you're going to get one of those B12 shots and see what it can do to make a difference in your life. I'm loving the people at Apollo Men's Health, and I'm telling you, it's the only place to go if you're looking to make a difference in your life. Check them out today, Apollo Men's Health.
Your home for sports. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5
and on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, back rolling through the first hour of the program. It's Nick and myself on The Press Box, taking you up till 4. Blitz takes you till 7. So Nick kind of alluded to this. One other NBA note, Luka Doncic on record not really digging the whole play-in between the bottom four seeds, 10, 9, 8, and 7, hoping that they stay at 6. Mark Cuban, as he should do, supporting his best player by coming out today and backing him, saying that he's not a fan of the play-in. But I think for the rest of the league, for the people that don't necessarily have a team to root for or in their city, it makes things a hell of a lot more interesting when you know that teams are fighting for their lives, and that instead of just being a team that gets in to get wasted by one of the LA teams or one of the top seeds, that instead you got a chance for a couple of games to really play some more significant basketball that can mean something.
Yeah, and I'm all for keeping it to the traditional eight teams. I feel like the NBA playoffs is long enough. How long is the NBA playoffs, Joel? Isn't it like two months long?
Yeah, you get started. Well, longer than that. It's like 2.5 the second months. Week in April, and if it goes to game 7, it ends right at the third week in June.
That's why I look at the NFL playoff picture, and I'm like, you know what? Don't ever mess with it. Just leave it. Just leave it. Don't add too many games. It's perfect the way it is. I never wanted anybody to mess with that too much. The playoffs, I can understand why it is that long. I don't like the fact that it's that long, but I do think they did right in getting rid of the best of five series in the first round. I think that was the right move because I think that could change the dynamic and the fate of a team. But I tend to agree with Luka, Joel. I don't think they need to do this play-in. I think you stick to the top eight teams, and if you make it, great. If you don't, you don't. That's how I feel.
Here's Cuban backing up Luka today by saying, I get why the NBA is doing it, but if we're going to be creative because of COVID, we should go straight up 1 through 20 and let the bottom four teams play in. This year in particular, you do it since the 10 games were cut from the normal 82-game schedule, and they were all conference games. The worst part of this approach is that it doubles the stress of the compressed schedule. rather than playing for a playoff spot and being able to rest players as the standings become clearer getting ready for the postseason, teams have to approach every game as a playoff game to either get in or stay in the top six and avoid the tournament and the consequences. He said, as Lucas said, the consequences are enormous. So players are playing more games and more minutes in fewer days. Now, what I would say, Nick, to that is I support the fact that I like it for this year, but I understand what Cuban's saying and Lucas saying from the simple standpoint of if you get back to 82 games next year and all tickets and full house capacity, now there's not a whole lot of teams suffering in any way, shape, or form. And I still firmly believe that's why I've never been a fan of breaking up the divisions. There should be something said and a little extra given to those that in the regular season did enough to, one, get in, and two, more importantly, win their division. It has to have some, that carries some weight. So what I don't like is, oh, we don't have to be one of the top eight seeds and fight our ass off to get in. We can just, as long as we're in one of those bottom fours, whether it be 10, 9, 8, or 7, we're going to have a play-in anyway. So
you appreciate the NFL type of approach of earning
earn it in the regular season.
They just don't care about divisions in the NBA, though. They just don't care for something. They absolutely have no care for it.
But don't you feel like that's because for a lot of years the West was so much better than the East from 1 through 8? So everybody always said it was the more competitive conference and that a lot of good teams in the West were going to get left out because there's a lot of bad teams in the East with sometimes losing records that were going to get in.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting thing. I can't literally disagree. I can't disagree with you too much because I haven't put enough thought into it because they just don't care about divisions. But no, I mean, I'm okay. Look, there are situations where you look at the 9 seed. And when you go into the playoffs, into the postseasons, Joel, and you look at that 9 seed, you're like, you know what? I would rather see that 9 seed in there over that 8 seed.
Look at last year, Phoenix, what they did, they ran the table in the bubble and they didn't get in.
Classic, perfect example. And yes, that bothers me. But even if it was bad luck that went your way, you probably didn't deserve to be in the playoffs anyway. And you probably weren't going to make that much of, chances are, you probably weren't going to make that deep of a run in the playoffs anyway. That's all I'm saying. You could make a run. You could see a 7 seed go a little bit further than normal. But in most cases, it's usually the top seeds that make it to the finals, and they end up settling that way. So,
plus, here's what I don't like, Nick. Say, and Dallas is at the 6 seed right now, but say Dallas slides, right? And they get in to and they earn a spot in one of the top 8. But in doing so, they really got to exert a lot of effort. Now, you're coming in gassed a little bit, and you know you already got to bring it against, say, a Clippers team.
Yeah.
But if you were at full strength, we saw what the Mavs did to the Clippers last season when Luka went nuts. You'd love to see that. So with the league thinking, oh, no. What we've done is we've made it more exciting and more meaningful at the bottom. But in fact, you also could be taking away from a team that could really push one of the top 2 seeds in the West if rested and healthy going into a series against the Clippers. But if they had to, and God forbid they have an injury too, but if they had to really bust their ass just to get in and then they got to turn right around and start playing the Clippers, now there's literally no chance at all that they're going to do anything like last year. So,
no, it's interesting. I understand why the NBA is doing it, especially considering it's not a full 82-game season. So I see why the play-in is happening, but I can see why from a strategic standpoint, from a health standpoint, especially a star player like Luka, maybe even if you're a player that's a veteran and really need that just really need to go straight to the playoffs. There's various reasons as to why you'd rather go that route, but look, hey, they said at the beginning what they were going to do. That play-in tournament stuff is not going to change. So they probably have to deal with it this year. And hopefully, if all things go right with the vaccines and all, you go back to 100% capacity next season, and you don't have to worry about that at all. You just go back to the regular top 8 seeds. Unless they combine this pandemic situation into more bucks and somehow expand the playoffs and the games, kind of like what the NFL did with the regular season. That's basically what they did, but I don't see the NBA doing that right now.
Well, you guys can be a part of the discussion. You want to talk about that or something else? We just got one in the book. Still 2 hours to go with the show, and that means you have plenty of opportunities to be a part of it. 713-780-3776 gets you in on that HR&P listener line for calls and texts. Otherwise, Twitch and Twitter. Nick and I are very interactive throughout the program. So hour two gets underway next. Don't go anywhere. It is the Press Box ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.